The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And we're back here on Analyze This, and I got Teacher Jones joining me here. In the studio, we're talking history, and my good friend Dwayne Henry told me, obviously there were Virgin Islanders emigrating to the U.S. in the mid 1800s. Edward Wilmot Blyton, right, left St. Thomas, right, in the mid 1800s because he was born in 1830. You know what I'm saying? So 1832, and then Mark Vesey, who went to Charleston, South Carolina in the early 1800s, leading a rebellion as a free black man in 1822. But, you know, you bring up a good point there, right? Because, and I'm noticing everything that we're talking about has serious connectivity, because I had on the UVA president 2 weeks ago, because Raphael Warnock was in the territory, the U.S. senator, and he was...
I got to meet him.
You did?
I did.
Okay, that's good. That's good, because he seems to be a level-headed guy. And President Hall is from Savannah, right? And so I was telling him that one of my good friends, you know, one of my closest friends, she now lives in Savannah because her daughter goes to college in Savannah. And it's my understanding that's... She lives in Savannah. It's my understanding that Savannah and Charleston have a lot in common as it relates to... building structures and all that stuff. And when I went to Charleston in 2018, you know, a part of me felt like I was at home, you know, because I saw some of the buildings in Charleston. I was like, what? Some of this is reminiscent of, you know, colonial St. Croix back in the day, right? And he was the one who told me that there were free beaches in Charleston. Black people could go to beaches in Charleston that they couldn't go to in Savannah and all that stuff. And now you're telling me today that they used to take black men from New York City down to Charleston?
Yes. They used to knock them on the head, take them down there and sell them. Free
wow.
people. Free people.
Wow.
It was a Portuguese concern that was doing it, but it was a big business.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that Butto had the big street fight. It was a gang fight. Yeah.
Every time I think of Portuguese, I think of Bartholomew Diaz. when I was growing up, right, it was about Columbus, right? Columbus and the famous explorer out of Portugal was Bartholomew Diaz, you know what I'm saying? And boats, you know. So now you mentioned in Portuguese, wow.
But you know what amazes me is that St. Croix, St. Thomas were islands, and the only way to get here was by sailboat.
Yeah.
And so many people here,
yeah,
black people, white people, everybody was a sailor.
But he was heading.
The fishing was here, smuggling was here,
yeah, but Colón,
piracy was here.
But Colón.
Trade.
Colón was telling people he was heading east and didn't know he was heading west.
No, he knew where he was going. He didn't know America was in the middle. He had been to Iceland, possibly to Newfoundland, definitely to the Azores and the Canaries. He was sailing since he was 10. He was good.
Oh, yeah?
His brother, Bartholomew, was a map maker, and they had decided the world was round and that Newfoundland was northern China.
So Columbus
But they wanted to come farther south so they could get the black pepper and the cloves, the Spice Islands. That's where the money was. That's what they wanted.
Dallas.
So they just didn't know America was in the middle.
Let me give some programming notes for tonight, because, you know, I get wrapped up in these history conversations with the band Stan Joins. So we got the PBS NewsHour coming on from 7 to 8. Finding Your Roots from 8 to 9. It's explore history and music with singers Alanis Morissette and Ciara, right? And then at 9, Julius Caesar. Follow along as Caesar controls Rome and consolidates his grip over the Republic. That's from 9 to 10. Frontline, explore the stories of Ukrainian families in search of their missing families. That's from 10 to 11 in the Armand Porin Company, from 11 to midnight. Okay, so the news are at 7, Finding Your Roots at 8, Julius Caesar at 9, Frontline at 10, and Armand Porin Company at 11 to midnight. So, Teacher Joins.
I'd like to say something real quick.
Go ahead.
By moving away from sailing,
mm-hmm.
by our people here in the Virgin Islands, in mass moving away from sailing, forgetting their sailing heritage, getting off of boats and moving ashore. They're losing their soul, I think, because sailing isn't always fun. In fact, it's usually not fun. You get out there, you get burned and beat up, lightning, thunder, bad weather, things breaking. Oh, my God. And you just wish you were ashore again. As soon as you get ashore, though, Neville, you can't wait to get back out. There's something that cleans out your soul on being on the ocean, and it's something that belongs to the heritage of St. Croix and St. Thomas. Mm-hmm. The people here were out there on that ocean, battling that ocean, loving that ocean. We're an island, and somehow or other, we've forgotten it.
Let me ask you this question. Those days when I go up to the bypass and I park up there by the lookout, those clear days, and I could see you guys on your sailboats out there, what's it like out there? Explain that part. Well, we could literally see 30 miles away, because I mean St. Thomas is 40 miles away, so I'm assuming you guys are like 10 miles away from St. Thomas. What's it like out there on the best of best days? Water still, visibility at its highest level. Is that heaven?
It cleans you. It cleans you out. It doesn't matter nice or bad. It cleans you out. Whatever stress you had ashore, whatever prejudices, whatever anger, whatever needs you have, whatever is driving you ashore, once you get out there, it just evaporates. It's just you and God and you and the sea. And it's just purifying. What can I say? It's nothing you can describe unless you understand it, unless you've been there. And if you've been there, then you get it. And we just love it. So no matter how much a pain in the butt it is out there.
You never did any sailing up in Georgia, North Florida, South Carolina?
No, my grandfather's dad was from Marblehead, Massachusetts, was born in Marblehead. He was a scion of ship's captains. But when his ship went down, he was a ship's captain. When his ship went down and he and his crew floated around for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. he got ashore and his wife Ann said, "You ever touch water again, you'll never see me or the children as long as you live." Ended up coming ashore, taking a job with an insurance company. They transferred him to Atlanta. My grandfather met a short redheaded girl in Georgia, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know about my sailing heritage until I'd already been here for 8 years on a sailboat, piling my kids from Central on that sailboat, racing all the regattas with them all over the Northern Caribbean.
You got here in the early 90s.
91.
So you found out about your sailing heritage in 2001?
1999.
Okay, 6 years.
8 years. Yeah.
Oh, you got here in 91, correct, 91 to 99. Yeah, 8 years, yeah.
So I told my parents when I was three I was going to live on a sailboat in the Caribbean. They laughed. When I got out of college, I applied here, and 7 years later, I got called from Joy Williams saying, "You want the job or what?" So I came. I immediately found a 50-year-old sailboat and took a loan out on it and moved aboard and piled my students from Central on the boat.
You live in the Christiansted Harbor?
No, Teague Bay at the Yacht Club.
Oh, yeah, club, okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God, it's gorgeous. You got a dinghy dock, you got lockers, you got a restaurant there, safe parking.
One of my listeners, out of Culebra. Danny, you ever been out when John called from Culebra, when the man called from Culebra? One of our listeners, and he listens to NPR. So one day, right, towards the end of the year, you know, I was just thinking about reminiscing about 2023. I said, "Hey, John, from Culebra, what going on? I haven't heard from you in a while." And he called the show a couple of minutes later, and he talked in the same context that you just talking about now. Because he been living out on this boat. He said, "I got everything out here. I don't need anybody to harass me." Yo, that was cool. You know what I mean? I can't relate to that. You know what I'm saying? But that was cool, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, from the stress of Central High in the day, you get on that sailboat at night and it goes away. But then, too, on Saturdays, we had practices on Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. I piled my students from Central on that boat. And we went sailing, all of those who wanted to, who I thought had enough sense to duck when I asked them to. Mm-hmm. We went to different islands cruising. We raced all the regattas. We won a lot of them. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of trophies sailing this 50-year-old heavy sailboat. Yeah. And those kids now, I got so many kids in the Navy and the Coast Guard and the Merchant Marine on tourist boats. Mm-hmm. They're out there, man. A lot of kids that grew up on that boat are in the marine industry now.
One of my listeners, Lorna Nichols. Morning, Lorna. She said, from the song Cool Change, about the sailing, the albatross and the whales, they are my brothers. You know what I'm saying? So, wow. The song is by a band called Little River Band.
Yeah.
And she says, or Sailing by Christopher Cross. I mean,
you leave all the pettiness of life ashore behind, man. You just leave that pettiness behind and you join the earth and the sea.
That was cool, man, because I was referencing when I was going through mini depression during COVID, right? A sports junkie like myself got no... no sports to watch on TV, totally lost. And, you know, I'd head up to Lagoon every night, park up there, a couple of hours, surf the net, blah, blah, blah. And looking at the Christiansted Wharf, and I noticed, I was talking to Zen O'Bain about it, he's supposed to be coming out a little bit, that I noticed my view was being impaired by, with each passing day. And what had happened was, you know, folks who couldn't go down island because of COVID, they came to the Virgin Islands and they were living here for months because they couldn't go to the St. Lucias and the Dominicas and all that
stuff. Well, it wasn't just that. Yeah. If you got a condo on the 20th floor of a high-rise in Detroit, man, and it's COVID, get out.
No, they, I'm talking about boaters because we started the show.
Right. The number of boaters increased dramatically. People got out of those condos, so, bought boats, so, and sailed down here.
Well, I'm talking about a career boater. So we started the show on the 27th of April, 2020. And we got a text message in May. And Tanya read it to me. And she said that this lady, she said we're from Massachusetts, I think it was. And they're boaters, and they typically go down island for the entire winter season. They couldn't go to Down Island this year, so they set up shop, and they've been living in St. Thomas for months, and they listen to NPR, and we like listening to Neville James, you know, the kind of inspirational stuff that, you know, you need, you know what I'm saying? And that's when I realized, wait a minute, this thing is real. And then, so Chris, who was our engineer at the time, he sent me the photo from Megan's Bay, loaded with boats. And then everybody chimed in. That's when everybody said, yo, the same thing going on in the St. Thomas waterfront. It going on down in Frederickstead. So what you dealing with up in Lagoon is all over the Virgin Islands. And that's when, again, I took the posture. Virgin Islands to the rescue again. Because they couldn't go down island, or the, those islands were rejecting them. COVID, you can't come in. Ports closed, and we were there. And we did look. Rarely, and as weird as it is, I don't want to say benefited, but I know we did very well during the pandemic, man, on multiple fronts. Seriously, looking at it,
I did. My Airbnb was full. I was chartering every day on my little sailboat. Definitely. There are a lot of people here trying to escape from condo world.
So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
Thursday's a party, but in the evening, right? For the skipper's meeting where everybody gets their courses and gets their crew together and registers.
Okay.
And then we're racing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, good.
But if you want to come out,
racing starts what time?
The races are going to start at 11.
11.
Yeah, because the sailors got a party. You can't get them up early in the morning.
And how far out are they going to for the racing?
We ain't going far out. It's supposed to be light air this weekend. We're going to race around Buck Island, and then we're going to do some up and downs right off the coast for fun, and that's about it. But we're on the water. We're together. We're having fun. We're forgetting about life's problems.
Yeah, man. Congratulations, man.
And we want the island to come out and party with us.
I got to swing up there. Call one of my friends and say, "Yo, let me go up east to check out this regatta, man."
Yeah, man.
I said, "Yeah, man." Go
and
to see
check out the parties too.
Go to see
and one real quick moment. Rotary Club, Mid Isle raffle tickets. We've got to fund $58,000 in scholarships we promised to kids in college.
Okay.
We got programs going with programs with where we give money to schools for different programs. We've got job shadow days and apprenticeships, medical careers, entrepreneurship programs. We've got to sell these raffle tickets. Rotary Mid Isle, when you see us at the market or wherever you see a Rotarian out there giving up their day to sell these raffle tickets, please buy some raffle tickets and help support us.
You got it. Thank you very much, teacher, man. Good to see you.
Thank you, Neville.
And congrats. You got it. That's how Stan joins. I got my history lesson for Tuesday. I'm loving it. You know what I'm saying? Now I got more research to do. Late at night or when I duck in by the Florence Williams Library, because I got to do that as well. Thank you very much, my man. Good to see you, man. Appreciate it, right? And I got to look at those New York City fights that you're telling me about where they took the free men and took them down to Charleston. I'm gonna do my homework on that. You know that.
That's right.
So we're good. I'll get in contact with you. Okay. We're good. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
You got it. That's Don Joins, St. Croix Yacht Club, right? They got their... regatta taking place on the 32nd, I think you said it was, right? Taking place on Zeno Bain. Gonna be joining me. I'm gonna make sure Ben will get his headphone check so we do what we got to do and all that good stuff. Check. So, and I apologize, I know, but your boy's a history nut. You know what I'm saying? I can't help myself to check when that man start to talk the history. I love it every minute of it. So don't hold it against me, you know what I mean? I really believe that, you know. Neville James and NPR is like, you know. Do they call them the Heckle and Jekyll? We are growing up, you know what I mean? So, you know, when we start to talk history and all that stuff, and that Bomba Alex story there is real, man. But I had heard about the Joseph Kennedy influence and major bootlegging that were taking place up there in the Greenkey area, and Cornelius Penteny, Miss B, you know, up there, and, you know, that one there. And it had major money being generated right just so. It's like, now I didn't know about the German U-boat thing and all that stuff, so I got to look into that. But there was one thing that freaked me out, right? When I was a teenager, I was junior bowling champion in 1980, and we went to the Tournament of the Americas. Okay, now I said, I'll take a seat there, and we don't spray up everything and brand new headphones and all that stuff. And one of the bowlers from Puerto Rico, his name was Otto Müller, which is a German name, you know. And I was curious as to where he from Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is Latin. What he doing with his German name? But now I'm starting to figure it out, Danny. Right? The influence around here been on for years. So, I ain't surprised at all when I heard that part, you know. And I gonna look that up and do some more research in that regard. We guys end up being from the rainforest here in the studio. I'm gonna let you get comfortable. Okay, we're going to take a break in a minute, so I want you to come on, and then we got to go to that break. So what we're going to do is we'll continue to, this afternoon, right, at 5:30, we got Commissioner's Corner, right, Danny, today, right, Tuesday's 5:30, Commissioner Deanne Wells Hendrington. We got the Commissioner's Corner that takes place here on the radio, WTJX FM 93.1. The Commissioner's Corner with the Commissioner of Education. And I always remember we got the news feed with Marcelina Ventura Douglas, and we also got Tom Ader writing stories and all that good stuff. So I definitely want to thank Teacher Stan Joins for coming in and educating us and letting us know about our history. And he had me to know that while the migration of Virgin Islands and people from the Caribbean to New York, the St. Croix to Virgin Islands, major migration was from the 1890s until about the 60s. You have me to know that it actually started a long time before that. Good 30, 40, 50 years before that, after World War I. I mean, after emancipation. And even during emancipation, people were working their way up to New York. So check this out. We'll take a break. San Obeying and come into the mix. They got a big meeting, community meeting coming up, I believe Thursday, 5:30 at the Justice Building over there in Estate Lorraine. We'll get into some more details of that. We spoke with him last week, and he's going to update us as to any run-ins that may have occurred over the last 7 days. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
The PBS NewsHour has a rich legacy of in-depth reporting and strong storytelling.
Only four people have sat in that chair before us, and the enormity of this moment is not lost on me. People turn to us because they know they can hear from trusted sources of information and news.
That won't change a bit, even as the faces behind the desk change.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Bennett.
And I'm Amna Nawaz.
Weekdays at 7 p.m. on WTJX TV, Channel 12.
And we're back here at Analysis. I want to thank Stan Jones for coming in and giving me a history lesson for this man. Another brilliant Virgin Islander has stepped his way into the studio, the one and only Zeno Bain from the rainforest out to the west. Morning, Zeno.
Good morning. Good
glad
morning.
To have you on. All that stuff. Good Hope Falcon, right? back in the day. And all that stuff. Zeno, where your people come from?
Trinidad.
Trinidad.
Yeah, but they had lived here for...
Donkey years.
Involved in food business, restaurant, vegetarian food in the West.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably know my mother selling some of the first veggie burgers. Yeah, man.
Oh, that's your mother?
Yeah.
Wow. For real?
Yeah.
Wow, man.
And then my father used to be a musician and landscaper.
Okay.
So he used to play Latin music and calypso. Yeah.
Zeno, St. Croix and the Virgin Islands is really the true melting pot of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
We could make that. I remember from Antigua, right?
Right. Yeah, we have all the down islands.
My engineer, this man, in roots out of Dominica. You know what I mean? We really got a lot to feel good about in this place, man.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying? Mixture. Yeah, and of course, our history speaks for itself, given how we've influenced a lot of things. I went to, in 2005, my very first year as a senator, right? Me and my lady, I met her brother. He was living in Brooklyn, right? Bay Ridge, right? His name is Alex, right? So Denise went to Brooklyn. And he found out that I was a senator, right? So, and he loved politics. And so I met him and we sit down and, he just started to talk about the leaders of the Caribbean and he just turned out and named them Eric Williams. Right, that was a big name in Trinidad, right?
He was
the prime minister. Yeah. That's right. The term, right? Right. And when he mentioned, I said, "Wait, this man know what he's talking about." You know what I mean? And for me, as a history major, and Antigua is Verbod, Bradshaw out of St. Kitts Nevis, the list goes on and on. Skerrit, right? Compton. So every time I see or hear one of us, because back then the number one newsman in the Virgin Islands was a dude named Alvin G. He used to be on JKC Studios and WTJ and WSTX back in the day. And a part of his show was BBC Caribbean. And when that would be like in the his news thing was from 4:30 to 6, and in between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, BBC Caribbean. And when I listening to these men speak that Queen's English, as you know, yo. We second to nobody, in the Caribbean. I'm talking about
right.
This region, a very powerful region. So I like to brag about it, and we do that a lot on the table talk. I bring you on because you're with EPA Region 2, New York, New Jersey, Virgin Islands. That's it.
Puerto Rico.
What's the mandate of the Environmental Protection Agency?
It's public health protection and the environment.
Okay.
The environment.
And how do we go about, because you're having a lot of these meetings right now. Is this part of something that we were deficient with in the past? We weren't having these meetings, in particular with us having a refinery on the island, and now we're literally stepping up to the plate and getting the community more involved in, you know, what the EPA is supposed to provide pursuant to the mandate?
I think, you know, the EPA not having, well, I'm on the ground now, right? So it's trying to liaise and share the information with the region.
Because you providing an avenue and a forum and filling a void. I didn't hear about these things back in the day, and I raised up in the heart of the Hess-Hovensa window on St. Croix, which lasted 46 years.
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, because there's a lot of things we don't know about until the community talks about it.
You know, we got caught up in, well, our native people them gain walk. Our Virgin Islanders gain walk. So it's job, they could build house, mortgages, all that stuff.
But which is important.
Yes,
right?
Yes, important. Can't deny that. Can't deny that. But the environment is actually more important.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking
public health, if you just said it.
Right, public health and the environment. They go hand in hand, right? We got to protect our environment, our home, in order to protect the public health.
Without a doubt.
And it's not to say that we have to make a decision between the economy and building homes and, you know, building wealth.
We could find that balance.
Right. Yeah. Versus the environment. Yeah. You know, we can find the balance.
Okay, good. Who is the regional director for Region 2?
The administrator.
The administrator, I'm sorry, I apologize.
Is Lisa Garcia.
Lisa Garcia. Right. She's lived in the region, or she's from New York, New Jersey?
She lives in the New York, New Jersey region.
And because that is arguably, you know, I don't know how young I would have said, well, nobody can tell me. It's arguably the most heavily populated area in America, the New York metropolitan area, right? Mm-hmm. I know LA is up there. You got to pay attention to what's going on in your environment, because everybody driving a car, you know what I'm saying?
And if you've been on, New Jersey outside of the city, you see a lot of industry.
Right? Yes.
So I'm sure I can imagine the balance that they had to.
Well, you know where it has come from, right?
Remind me.
Jersey. You had a truck on it.
Right, I remember the original trucks. Yeah, but of course I knew it here.
No, I'm talking about his thing was actually a one truck deal that actually expanded to this monstrous. And you know that there was a point where this refinery was the number one refinery in terms of size in the Western Hemisphere at one point.
So he grew that from a small business, right?
Yeah. Well, when you think of it, just the magnitude of, and then we were talking earlier with Stan Joins, George Dudley, who was a lawyer for Hess, he educated me about the Jones Act, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, and we actually needed an exemption from the Jones Act to allow for the ship them to come in into the port here and all that stuff. So literally, you know, to crystallize this part of our discussion, everything we do is integrated and connected.
Everything, right? Yeah, everything is exactly.
Yeah, it freaks me out when you think about it. So we want to get the public more educated as to how we can play a better role individually and collectively in protecting our environment and identifying areas that we can keep them at mole hill level before they get to a mountain. Right. So that's the reason for the meetings. And we got one coming up on Thursday.
That's right. Thursday, 5:30 p.m., as you said, at the Justice Building in Lorraine, just north of the post office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to accomplish
that. And that's in conjunction, again, with DPNR, Waste Management Authority, WAPA.
Commissioner Oriol.
I think his directors will be there. I don't know if Commissioner Oriol will be there.
I was going to ask you. You've spoken with him.
Yeah, definitely.
Very level-headed guy, and means well for the territory.
Yeah, we definitely have had conversations, not in the last month or so, but I saw him at the task force, the Coral Reef Task Force.
Oh, that's right.
In November.
That was in November, right?
When we were talking last time.
DPNR, I think they do a good job. They try their best. And that agency is actually more federally funded than it is locally funded. For years.
Right, EPA funds a lot of DPNR.
Oh, that's EPA.
EPA funds a lot of the programs, like whether it's air quality or beach monitoring, you know, a number of these programs, staff, as well as the grants that support wastewater and drinking water.
Now, you mentioned Monitor, and when we were looking to get back into refining air pollution monitor, that's the name of it, that's the term?
Air quality monitors.
Quality monitors.
Yeah.
That was a big question going into the restart, the reconstruction and restart of the refinery. And we had a change of administration. Remember, it was the MAP administration who actually, you know, started that process, and then the Brian Roach administration inherited it. With the advent of the internet, the public is more, well, they have greater access to information now than we did back in the day when we were growing up, and you know, refinery dead on the South Shore. When Christmas come, we getting our head struck. You know what I mean? Brand new head struck, taking them home. We good to go every year. Isn't that a good thing that the public has this access to information?
Yeah, so we have, and you saw that, right? When we did the cleanup at the refinery, we had online access. You could go on and see the air quality at any of the monitors at any point. Right, so you know the monitor in your neighborhood, and you can see the air quality and have that level of comfort, not just having to say or believe on someone reporting it out to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, the South Shore ain't just about Hess. We had an aluminum facility originally that was Harvey, right? It was Hess and Harvey, and then Mark Marietta, Alcoa. And all that stuff. That cleanup is complete over there at the down there, with the what do you call it? The brown mud. I think we used to call it.
Yeah, the brown mud. Yeah.
That.
Yeah, this I understand, and I can't speak in too much detail on that site, and the status, but I understand there's still some cleanup activity. Okay. I know, for example, on the aluminum side, there's some groundwater contamination.
Yeah,
that
is
a RCRA corrective action to clean up the ground. That's ongoing cleanup activity there. Like, now, there is at the Hess.
EPA got anything to do with it, with a container port down there?
The reports that we get around the orders, I mean, it goes through DPNR. Mm-hmm. DPNR is the first line, and work, you know, the territory agencies, the other agencies that need to be involved to go out and assess. But so we have an interest, you know, as far as any orders or any issues. But as far as the container port itself, unless it gets into EPA regulations.
I'm going to read something from an August 1979 New York Times article, right? Because what had happened was when Hess came here, he had an agreement. I think it was a 15-year deal. And then he had subsequent amendments, 81, 90. 98, what have you, right? So the article says, a port in St. Croix, a coup for Leon Hess. Islanders welcome the jobs, but weary of the tax breaks he might get. Now, you know, we know in business, right? Couple of things. You got to give somebody a chance to recoup their investment. That's just a business principle, right? You know what? Mommy fixed about this veggie burger dog in the West, right? And then in addition to that, it isn't just about them recouping their investment. You want sustainability going forward, right? But you also want to make sure that they're paying some taxes so that we could pave the road so we could get to the veggie burger place down the West, right? But just to put in context, right, how big, right, and the impact in the region we're talking about, I want to read these two paragraphs. This is 1979, audience, Zeno Bean and Danny Challenger on the board. According to Mr. Hess, the container port project was initially proposed in 1971, which was 5 years after the refinery opened. And this container port was an infrastructure thing to put the Virgin Islands in a more competitive position for buying supplies by avoiding the extra stop in Puerto Rico. So that's economics again. We're talking about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is inevitable, it's a quote now, that the container port will cut down the cost of food, merchandise, and equipment by coming to the Virgin Islands directly instead of transshipping containers through the ports such as Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. The project is scheduled to be completed within 2 years. So 79, so this is 81. Located on the south shore on the island adjacent to the 700,000 barrel per day refinery. The 36-acre container port will have the capacity to accommodate 475 shipping containers on the pier, more than five times the amount of cargo now stored in the two main ports on St. Thomas. This is 1979, Zeno.
Mm-hmm.
Today is what?
Yeah.
This is 20, that's 45 years ago, Zeno B. I mean, and this was the Virgin Islands and Lille St. Croix talking in these gargantuan numbers a long, long time ago. I mean, so to have that kind of capacity and the ability to do that is a good thing, but people tend to forget that it's one thing to have capacity, but you're going to have maintenance, you're going to have long-standing management to allow for that capacity to actually benefit the people of the Virgin Islands.
Right, yeah.
700,000 barrels a day as you know, in 79? Wow. Did we bite off more than we could chew? Looking back, in terms of volume. Well, it wasn't too big for its own good. Right. And that could happen,
ahead,
right?
Yeah, is the planning ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, a lot to consider as far as the growth of the
And of course, we were in the middle of our population tripling, right?
Right.
But with expansion comes a need for greater management, greater education, and a greater collaboration of all these agencies to include yours, DPNR, Public Works, all the different areas, right?
Right.
So that's why it's important that we have good governance. Ben, we'll talk a little bit about why good governance is important. As someone working in an agency that is, you know, mandated to protect public health.
Yeah, we definitely need to work together, right? There's, I think in all of the issues, there's, like you said, it all links back together.
Mm-hmm.
Each agency has a role. So even though we mostly work with, say, DPNR, Waste Management Authority and WAPA based on the programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do work with pretty much all of the agencies. There's some connection, right? So.
You're an environmental engineer.
Right.
We need more of those in the territory? Need more of those in the world? In the country?
Yeah, I think so.
You think so? Haven't been
definitely in the territory.
Yeah.
You know, I think we need.
Given we sell sun and sand like we do now, because we don't have the refinery with the 2,000 jobs at 60, 70,000 a year and all that stuff, and we're mostly selling sun and sand now.
I mean, in territory, I think we need a lot, right? I think any field that you probably raise, we likely have a gap. There's probably space.
Okay.
Right?
So we shouldn't pigeonhole ourselves into thinking it's just about a refinery and St. Croix and all that stuff.
The question last week you had asked about the kids and, you know, and encouraging them.
Yeah.
I think whatever they're interested in, right, there's an opportunity because we don't have a ton of competition here. We don't have a large population.
Yes.
If they can go and learn some skill and bring it back, you know, you can identify where there's needs and it's not. So I think, in the environmental field, certainly we need to consider more of the issues.
When we come back, we're going to a break now. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit about Bronxville. I don't know if that's your ballpark or whatever, but there's an economic component there as well. I learned that some 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
We're talking with Zeno Bean from the EPA, based here on St. Croix. Be back right after this.
Stay updated with news, alerts, and other valuable information with WTJX Newsfeed. Listen to the latest news stories that matter with Marcelina Ventura Douglas. Weekdays at 5 p.m. on WTJX 93.1, WTJX Newsfeed, your source for stories that matter.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here at Analysis. I enjoy every time that Nobin come into the studio. First of all, the name is just one of the coolest names. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And then I'm a Batman guy. You know what I'm saying? And Bane. I don't know if you know about that, right? Bane beat up on my guy early on in the show, and then we had to teach him a lesson towards the end. You know what I mean? But in the end, you felt sorry for him. You know what I'm saying? Because then you found out, that as a child he went through a lot. You know what I'm saying? Right. That's the nerdy side of me. Don't hold it against me. You know what I mean? So Bane, everything you think of Bane, and people are like, I'm on Twitter. And people always reference when Bane beat up the Dark Knight, the first go around. They act like as if, y'all forgetting that the Dark Knight actually came back, and whooped that you know what. You know what I mean? So I have fun with that. You know, Zeno, you were talking earlier, and in fairness to you, I try to extract as much out of you while at the same time not really, take advantage of you, right? You're here. With primary and maybe secondary focuses, right? Educating the public, right? Public involvement.
Exactly.
Right. And my job is really about getting true definitions for what we're talking about so that the public is knowledgeable. And I encourage people themselves, to go to websites. Don't just listen to Neville James talking and his opinion and my guests. Read, and you could arrive at your own conclusion, right? That's just how I am, right? So I mentioned Bronxville, right? I will admit that when I, at 40 years old, 20 years ago, 2005 actually, when I became a senator, I was nowhere as knowledgeable as I am now as it relates to our environment. Over the years, I actually took for granted, when people were talking about protecting our environment, how critical a healthy and clean environment is, not just for the Virgin Islands, but for the world, right? Because we got to look at things globally, right? Because we travel. And I spoke with Tanya one time. She went around the world. She was in Indonesia. And she said, Neville, when I look up in the sky, I see a smog.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And she explained to me that she was told, that's a classic example of where countries don't have an EPA and the things that you won't see in America because we have an EPA. So I want you to, before I touch on Brownfields a little bit, I want you to give your agency its flowers now as to why the Environmental Protection Agency, and we got a polarized country right now where people want to deregulate the things. You got one side want to deregulate, and the next side want to protect the environment. Give your agency its flowers now as to why it's important not just for an EPA existence, from an EPA existence perspective, but why the need for EPA as it relates to a healthy environment that people could feel good, that we could look outside and see on a good day St. Thomas and St. John and the BVI. That's because of a healthy environment.
Yeah,
or mandates for a healthy environment.
Right, and I think when you, like you started off, most people didn't know the importance of the environment, right? The focus was...
You trying to be nice to me?
No, I'm just saying it was industry. It was industry, right? The focus was building industry, right?
Jobs and
yeah, so
and
we had to go through these different eras. Yeah. And eventually we learned, okay, we need to protect the environment. You could start... It takes, I think, starting to witness those issues, like you said, the smog, mm-hmm. or, you know, actually seeing the impact. So you have to do the research and understand what the impact is and all the science involved. What does that lead to impact, you know, the health, the public health? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's important for the EPA to have these regulations and protect the environment. We could see the impact. Like you said, you go to different countries that don't have these regulations in place, and you can see the impact in the environment. You know, air quality, for example, is easily, and the water quality is easily distinguished.
You mentioned the heavy industry in New Jersey, right? The industry in New Jersey, right? And you could literally see it. All you gotta do is stay on the turnpike, right? And there's a certain part of the turnpike from like exit 9 or 10, and you mm-hmm. start to head towards New York City. And on the right-hand side in particular, the shoreline, you could see the stacks, right? For the different industries that were taking place and all that stuff. And in many instances, you need that though, because when population, you got that high density, right? Mm-hmm. We got to deal with waste,
right?
And there's certain needs as it relates to electricity and all that stuff. So you talked about it earlier, that balancing act. Even if you're down the extreme end on one side versus the other, you need that balance regardless of what you're dealing with.
So it's like we start with one thing. We say, okay, we need to make money, and we see the detriment. Mm-hmm. What's the impact? Okay, how do we balance it out, as you said, mm-hmm. And continue to allow these industries to thrive, but without impacting our home, right? And the air we breathe and the water we drink.
Very, very important. So 2008, my second term as a senator, I got sponsorship, Richard Nixon, my staff, Janine, and all them, Peter Chalice. We got sponsorship for Bronxville legislation here in the Virgin Islands. And I went to a Bronxville convention in Detroit in May of 2008. And we ultimately passed the legislation. And there's a source article that says legislation would give new life to contaminated sites. So brownfields, by definition, are contaminated.
These are abandoned sites with perceived or known contamination.
That's a brownfield.
That's a brownfield. Right. So you don't have to know it's contaminated.
Yeah.
You have to perceive or believe it's contaminated. Okay. That's the first step to go out and do the testing.
Okay.
So it's an abandoned site.
And if a site is deemed contaminated, at that point, you're eligible for something from the mainland?
You're eligible for funding.
For funding.
Right, to clean up that site.
And the EPA is that funding source?
Yes.
Okay, good. Right?
And the VI has not taken advantage of that funding as yet.
Like in locations where we had gas stations and all that stuff, that would be deemed brownfield.
Right. Any site where it's abandoned and... Now, you can't... If you're looking for the funding, you can't be the person, the owner that contaminated the site. So it's a site that has been abandoned.
Yes.
And it's sitting there...
In other words, we rewarded you for doing that.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. So you do the testing and then you learn that it is contaminated, mm-hmm. and there's funding to assist with cleaning that site up.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's website defines brownfields as properties where expansion, redevelopment, or reuse may be complicated by the presence or potential presence, unless we're talking about the perceived mm-hmm. aspect, right?
Right.
Of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant. Cleaning up and reinvesting in these properties takes development pressures off of undeveloped open land and both improves and protects the environment. Quote, enabling legislation is a major criteria to have the Bronxville program within the territory. So it's a program under the EPA.
It is.
Right? said Nadine Noor Hassan, director of the Virgin Islands Planning Department of Planning and Natural Resources Environmental Protection Division, testifying Wednesday before the committee. Failure to meet the EPA's criteria led to unfavorable consequences for the division. Over the years, the EPA has decreased the program's annual funding, and that was because we weren't doing something locally, right? So
we have funding.
From an informational standpoint, right? A research and informational.
I'm not sure exactly why. I can't speak to why it was decreased, something I can look into, but I know we do provide funding for DPNR to do the phase one, to do the actual testing.
The testing, okay. Right, that's what it starts with.
Right, to determine if there's contamination.
So myself and Lewis Hill, we had sponsored the bill back then, and it was actually passed. And Jennifer Jones, who I spoke with her last week, she's an attorney. She does environmental work here in the territory. And we're looking at different sites. If I was to come to this meeting Thursday and say, you know, everybody focusing on the refinery and the restart, and I understand from a volume standpoint, you know, that's a legitimate argument because cash is king in a capitalistic society. I'm aware of that. But Mr. Bean, you got some other areas that may be contaminated that we could redevelop. Can you give me some guidance as to how we go about making this happen for the territory? Because the reality is we're selling sun and sand now. How do we, what advice would you give me? Generically, without getting too specific as to what I need to do. I know you're going to start with some research and all that stuff, but what else you would suggest?
Yeah, the first step is you can either work through DPNR or EPA to do that phase one inspection, to go out and have the site. So you just need an agreement with the existing property owner to access and do the inspection.
Okay, it starts with that.
I know there's some legislative piece that DPNR was checking into as far as
That's missing.
There's something as far as listing the brownfields, so I can't speak to that in detail, but I know there's a step they were working on to facilitate that process, because it needs to be listed as a brownfield site.
Yeah. And the reason why I wanted to talk a little about this, because we're in a protracted recovery, Mr. Bean. Hurricanes hit 2017. This recovery going to go till about 2030. That's how recoveries are, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know anything about Katrina, because that's a whole different thing down there, but I'm sure you read and all that stuff. And the Katrina deal, that one hit in 2005, and I think that one, the recovery lasted a good 12, 15 years up until about 2020. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and there's still, like, sometimes staff still there continuing. So when does it actually end?
So that's something that we should educate the public on, right? Because when they're thinking recovery and they're thinking, well, the feds make money available, things are supposed to happen overnight, it don't work that way.
It don't happen overnight. It doesn't work that way.
And then, of course...
Yeah, it's probably longer than 2030, to be honest. I mean, because we haven't started some of these projects yet, right? The funding is now getting really released. Mm-hmm. Some was released last year as far as design, but shovels aren't really in the ground yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and I mean, some of the stuff like Christiansted, EPA funded the work happening in Christiansted right now. The wastewater lines, right? That's through some of the funding that we give through DPNR to waste management.
And we're supposed to do our wastewater for St. Thomas and St. Janto, right?
Right.
That's in the works, right?
Right. We haven't done the application, so we got the fund approved for St. Croix.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the best estimate. I've heard a number of numbers and not the scale.
I heard $1.5 billion to $2 billion.
The cost estimate. But I'm talking about the time frame.
You
know, we've heard numbers 10, 20 years to replace all the pipes.
To redo the whole island.
Wow. Pipes, right? So I know they're considering how to reduce that and make it more efficient. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just wastewater, right? It's all the utilities at the same time. And you've heard the government talk about it, the governor or ODR, different agencies talk about the challenges with that and not having the capacity here, not having the workforce, right? We have a low unemployment here.
I was looking up something for the governor that I wanted to show to the governor. I said, Governor, now is the time to get all these young engineers who are going to be graduating from these engineering schools. I think recoveries are are made for them to as an entry into the work field, into the workplace. I mean, they're going to need some guidance, some people who got experience, because it's one thing to be in the classrooms, another thing to have the practical experience. You check what I'm saying? And your school were one of the top 20, I believe. MIT, right?
Right.
Yeah. Your school, one of the top 20 engineering schools in the list. Mm-hmm. I saw that, you know what I mean? And it's a, you know, it's a who's who of top engineering schools. Newsweek, I read it. No, US World, US News and World Report had listed the top 20. It was actually 22, because after 19, three of them tied, three of them tied at 20, right? And I think that would that we need to be creative, Zeno. I mean, it's one thing to say we hiring, but we need to be creative and put in place a long term plan where we could get young engineers to get here, because we can't keep using the excuse we don't have the workforce, Zeno. We need to go out and actually get that workforce to get the job done, because administrations change.
What's the alternative, right? It's what, paying for contractors to come in, which is more expensive.
No. We got to want people to live here, man. Walk and live.
Right.
You check and visit. You know?
And of course, the big issue we've heard about is, as well as the housing, right? Every time we have a hurricane,
that's the one concern. Housing. I was talking to Senator Francis about that. I was talking about his gas station, and I said, "B, the only thing I worried about is what we going if we were to do a major recruiting with young engineers, where they gonna live?"
Right.
You check what I'm saying? So that's a big issue, right? And we looked over median salary. I actually read some of the information here on the show, and I was saying, well, you know, we'd have to put in a cost of living adjustment for entry level engineer, even though the entry levels, you know, cost of living in the Virgin Islands is so much more than on average. Mm-hmm. So there's so many variables involved, and that's why planning is important, Mr. Bean.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. And we good. So details again, Thursday afternoon, 5:30, Department of Justice building on North Shore Road, Estate Lorraine.
Right.
After you're heading north on North Shore Road, when you leave the Via Lorraine intersection, it's after the post office. Right?
After the post office
on the right hand side. Let's look for the Department of Justice building. 5:30, typically last maybe two and a half hours, taking about eight.
That's right.
And are you open to any questions?
So please come out. Right? Mm-hmm. Please come out and raise your questions and take advantage of this opportunity.
That's what we're talking about. The one and only Zeno Bean, a Good Hope Falcon from out of the West, is up in the rainforest. Rainforest, all right, man? You still out there?
Yeah, I enjoyed the rainforest.
I used to see the smile on his face. think about that one, he said, yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much for spending some time. I'll come into the meeting.
Okay, I look forward to it.
Look out for me. Yeah. Right towards there, I'll be there about 6 o'clock. And yeah. We'll sit down there and rest. Thank you very much. Thank you, Stan Joints. Danny Challenge, everybody up at the Mountain Top. Marisol and everybody and all that stuff. Be good, be safe, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX-FM 93.1.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX-FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.